municipality of the District of St. Mary's Committee of the Whole meeting Wednesday, May 18th, 2022 at 4 p.m. We acknowledge that we are gathering in the Mi'kmaq, the traditional unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Can I have a roll call, please, Mallory?
Warden Weir.
Present.
Deputy Warden Poehler.
Here.
Counselor Baker.
Present.
Counselor Harple.
Present.
Counselor Mailman.
Present.
Counselor Malloy.
Present.
And Counselor Zink.
Present.
Thank you. Also in chambers tonight, we have CAO Mercy Jordan, Director of Finance Mary Fraser, and Municipal Clerk Mallory Fraser. Is there any additions to the agenda?
Warden, I would like to make an addition, if I could.
Okay.
On the gas prices.
Okay, we will put that under other matters of business under 9D, gas prices. Okay, I have an addition as well. We did receive correspondence back from Deputy Minister Justin Houston. So we will put that under correspondence as 8C. Marcy?
Thank you, Warden. If I could please have another item added. We received correspondence from the Sherbrooke ATV Club regarding property, municipal property.
Okay, we will add that under correspondence as well as 8D, ATV Club, Sherbrooke ATV Club. Any other additions? Okay, could I approve of the agenda with additions, please?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Counselor Harple, seconded by Deputy Warden Poehler, that we approve the agenda with additions. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda is approved. Could I also have approval of the minutes from the Committee of the Whole meeting held May 11th, 2022?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion by Counselor Baker, seconded by Counselor Malloy, that we approve the minutes from the Committee of the Whole meeting held May 11th, 2022. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes from the Committee meeting of the Whole meeting held May 11th, 2022 are approved. Is there any business arising from those minutes? Hearing none, we will move right along to presentations, and we have the only name I have is Mary Black from Nova Scotia Power, but
okay.
She has a contingency with her, I believe. Thank you.
Before I carry on, I want to let you know that our key presenter, Matt Drover, just jabbered me. He can see the slides, but he can't hear the conversation, and he was concerned whether you folks can hear him or not. So I'll give you a minute to put that together, and I'll explain. We really all wanted to be here in person, but COVID has affected Nova Scotia Power the way it's affected everyone. And because of that, we've pivoted, I guess that was the word for the year, we've pivoted into presenting Matt's portion of our presentation by the virtual platform. So thank you in advance for your understanding in regard to that. So my role at Nova Scotia Power, I'm your government relations advisor. And you're going to see shortly in the slides a little bit of information about what that is and why I'm there to serve you folks. But what I'd like to do right now is introduce my colleagues that have joined me here today. And the reason I brought them along is because they're going to support the Q&A segment of this. So Matt is going to present some slides, and then once that's completed, if you folks, or certainly during it, if it's at your preference, if you have any questions specific to any of the subject matter within the slides or anything outside of that, among this group, we're going to do our best to respond to those questions. So let me introduce my cast and crew, as I always would call them. Yeah. So ladies first, sorry. Darlene Bonby. So Darlene, perhaps you can tell the group what your role is, how long you've been with us, and why you think I brought you here tonight.
Hi. My name is Darlene Bonby. I am the field supervisor for the Stellar Maine and Ocean Guys Pro line crews, and this is part of my district. I've been with Nova Scotia Power now for 36 and a half years, and if that's coming to a close, actually very soon. Basically, I work with all the line crews that service your area.
Yeah, so she really knows your area well, so I'm really pleased to have her here. I think I'm gonna do youth before beauty, so that would be Darren.
Byron Young, and I'm the muscle of the crew and I sing bass. But I'm the operations manager for the Northeast Territory, which would include the Ocean Guysborough County. So really everything from the New Brunswick border to the causeway, and then everything in between from Truro right across to the Eastern Shore. So I work with Darlene and her team, looking after all of this area in the province. Been with the company 13 years, been with Scotia Power 13 years, but crossroads between the Scotia Power and the mayor for all that period of time.
Thank you, Baron. And Jason, last but not least.
Hi, Jason Liver. I'm the distribution forester, so I'm responsible, for, I guess, for the planning and implementation of our veg program. So I cover everywhere from Yarmouth to Sydney. We have four coordinators that are sort of positioned strategically throughout the province that handle specific regions. So, you know, our vendors, we trim 365, so all year round. So we just do the planning and implementation of all the tree work.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah. And my role, I'm going to elaborate on a little bit once we start walking through the slides. So if we're able to move to the second one, I'll say a couple things. I know we're still working through some facts here. Okay, so the government relations position is part of our customer relations team at Nova Scotia Power. And something that supports this slide are two things that I put on your desk just moments ago when I walked around. There's a business card without someone's name on it, and there's a magnet. But both of those things have on them a dedicated contact line, which we provide only to elected officials and their staff. Now, I do want to add the reason why we only provide it to elected officials, because there are over 500 of you folks across Nova Scotia. I'm going to make you feel like you're the only ones tonight, but there are a lot of you. So for that reason, we ask that you not share this dedicated information with any of your constituents, so that we're able to serve you with the service level that we strive for. So the phone number is monitored 24/7, 365 during regular business hours, meaning typical hours 8 to 4. If you called that number, it would be answered by someone within our collections responsibility team, because we find the bulk of the contact calls that we get that time of day are collections related. So if you have a constituent that maybe is going through a hard time and wants to come up with a settlement agreement around their bill or something of that nature, that person's going to answer the phone and respond to that. If you have something else that you want to talk about between those hours, the person that answers that call is going to transfer you to someone from my team. There are five of us, and we rotate the call responsibility around. But if there is something urgent at 2 o'clock in the morning on Boxing Day, someone will answer that phone. And what would be urgent? You know, it really could be urgent. It could be your water treatment plant has been without power for an extended period of time, and that's at risk of failure. So we have a way of escalating things of that nature along. The other piece of information on that card is the email address gov@nspower.ca, which I hope you might recognize from some of the outbound information that I use to provide from that email address. Things like recently would be our scholarship program. That was the last thing that came out. We want to, you know, share broadly. And when we're in harsh weather and we want to send information about storm response and customer contact information, we use that. But that email address is also for you folks to bring forward any inquiries that you would like for us to investigate. So I've provided you those two pieces of things. And then the third thing is a reference guide, which is a little bit of information about a lot of things about Nova Scotia Power. And it's really a great resource, but it's not a replacement for ever reaching out to us to ask us the question. So, you know, do what's fitting in the moment for you folks. And again, with that reference guide, that is something for you not to be shared broadly with your constituents, because it does include some dedicated contact information that's just for elected officials and their staff. So I've completed the segment that I was hoping to deliver. I wonder, do we have our technology working?
Yeah, so we can.
Matt Drover.
Matt, can you hear us now?
I can, yeah.
Okay, oh, perfect. We can hear you too. So whenever you're set to get going.
Yeah. Matt, it's Mary. I'm going to hand the microphone over to you now, and I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself to our guests.
Okay. Can you guys see me, or should I just turn my camera off?
We can't see you, Matt, so I'd say you can turn your camera off.
Okay, sure, no problem.
Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. As Mary mentioned, my name is Matt Drover. I'm the Senior Director of Transmission and Distribution Operations and Home Special Power. So my team is made up of field operations teams throughout the province, our scheduling and dispatch team, and our control center, which is responsible for operating the energy flows of the power grid in the province. And first of all, I just wanted to apologize for not being there in person today. I had fully expected to be there, and then unfortunately COVID started to go through my household over the last few weeks. So really disappointed I couldn't be there in person, but hopefully this mode works. As Mary mentioned, we have a number of slides that we'll go through, really set the stage for the various things we're seeing from a weather standpoint, and how we're countering that through investments, both in vegetation management as well as storm hardening of our system. And as everybody here knows, we definitely had a very impactful winter. We understand how impactful that was for the entire province. We had significant major storms pretty much from the beginning of January right through to the end of March. And we know how impactful that is on the reliability in the province. And we do take our commitment to reliability very seriously. And we know how impactful that is. A couple of the slides we go through today will give you some reassurance that we are all over it. So the first slide here, hopefully you can see it, it's slide number two. It shows a table of the weather patterns, and we mostly focus on wind. However, there are many different impacts that different kinds of weather can have throughout the province. Wind mostly impacts our trees in the province. During storms, windstorms that is, our number one cause of outages in the province are trees coming down from those high winds. Typically, when those winds get above 80 kilometers an hour, we start to see branches come down. And then when winds get up above 100 kilometers an hour, it can take down full trees. And when those trees come down into our power lines, that's what causes the power outages. And we track wind on a regular basis, look at various weather forecasts in this data. And going back to 2000, we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of hours each year that winds have been above 80 kilometers an hour. This graph here looks at Dartmouth, Greenwood, Halifax, Truro, and Sydney, but it's really the same story across the province. And that culminated in 2019 when we had Hurricane Dorian impact the entire province in September of that year. Hurricane Juan was the first big hurricane that we had back in 2003, but that really took a swath up the central part of the province, whereas Dorian impacted the entire province at the exact same time, pretty much everywhere from Dartmouth all the way through to Brett Cove. So we are tracking the weather very closely. We understand that that's changing, and because of that, we are investing differently than we have in the past in our respect. If you move to the next slide there, it shows our investment per year on vegetation management. I mentioned vegetation management, trees coming down are a big impact during windstorms. During snowstorms and ice storms, where we have heavy wet snow or significant ice buildup on trees, that can also cause a big impact for power lines. When those trees are weighed down, they don't even have to break or fully come to the ground. The branches can just be weighed down by heavy wet snow and ice. And that can impact our power lines as well. So our investment in vegetation management is critical to addressing the changing patterns that we're seeing in the weather. And since 2017, we've investing a significant amount in vegetation management. The only year that dipped a bit was in 2020, and that was mostly due to the pandemic and making sure that we had the right safety and health protocols in place. So we weren't able to get all of our crews out for the full year. Historically, we do vegetation management all year round. 2020, we couldn't do that, but we rebounded it in 2021, and we expect to do the same in 2022. Our vegetation management program, as Jason can attest to, is focused on the provincial scope, and we use information on past storms and areas that have been hit the hardest to inform where those investments are going to be, as well as an overall asset management approach. We look at tree growth, we look at areas that have grown significantly over the last few years, and dedicate resources to those areas as well. The next storm is a recap of the winter storms that we experienced this year. I mentioned that at the beginning. We did have 8 major winter storms from the beginning of January through to the end of March. And almost every one of those storms had winds above 100 kilometers an hour. Even the storms where we had significant wet snow and freezing rain as well. One of the storms on February 4th was actually a significant freezing rainstorm. We had ice start in the valley part of the province, move through into the middle and upper Sackville area, into Truro, and then into Goshen and Cape Breton as well. Very significant impact from ice. And we spent many days responding to the trees that have been damaged by that ice, removing the ice from the branches and doing everything we could to get the power lines back up as quickly as possible. But those 8 storms definitely had an impact on our system this year, and obviously have a liability impact to our customers as well. When we do have a storm like that, we do open our emergency operations center. It's our focal point for all storm management. We work very closely with the provincial EMO. We put dedicated Nova Scotia Power resources over to EMO. They have a direct line to our EOC, and we're constantly coordinating priorities that come up through EMO. So that is a really good conduit. Mary mentioned going through the government relations line, which is great for day-to-day. But during storms, EMO is the best point for focusing on priorities. Each of these storms, we do bring in contractors from outside the province. Our normal workforce is dedicated for day-to-day operations. During storms, we reach out to our utility partners in New Brunswick. We've gone as far as Ontario and Canada before, and then down into Maine and even Florida for some of our significant storms to bring power line technicians up to respond to those outages as quickly as possible. We do share resources, so if New Brunswick was to get hit as well, we'll send some of our resources there to help out. And it is something we focus heavily on when we have significant storms. The next slide focuses on our restoration principles, and this is mostly for the major storms that we have, where we do have to really focus on a direct approach of how we're going to restore customers. Our focus really is on public safety first, so working with the first responders that call in down power lines, making sure that those are addressed right off the bat so there's no exposure to public safety. And then we work on focusing on the biggest bang for our buck. So getting our bulk power transmission systems, basically the transmission lines that feed the our substations and our communities, they transfer the energy from our power stations into communities, getting those back up and running are top priority once we have public safety addressed. And then once we have our transmission system back in order, then we work with EMO on those critical infrastructures like hospitals and water stations and various priorities like that. Once we have those addressed, then we get into the mainline distribution feeders, which feed the communities themselves. And then once the those lines are back in, we focus on our branch lines, which feed subdivisions and smaller communities, and then individual services. We do stick to this as formally as we can to make sure that we do get the most people back on as quickly as possible. The next slide really focuses on the vegetation management that we've done in your area. I really focus on the 3 main distribution feeders that feed this area. And since 2015, we've spent over $1.7 million on vegetation management, which equates to about 93 kilometers. And over the next 2 years, we are estimating to do an additional 52 kilometers and spend another $1.4 million on vegetation management. To us, that is the biggest way to improve reliability during storms. Removing those trees from our right-of-ways, getting them out of the impact zone that can actually impact our power lines. So if trees do come down during storms, they'll be far enough away from our power lines so they won't actually cause an outage. This is an ongoing effort. We continually focus on this, and we work very closely with municipalities to implement our vegetation plan. The next slide focuses on individual trees that may be near power lines on people's properties. We do work very closely with individual property owners. None of the trees in the province are actually owned by Nova Scotia Power, so we don't have blanket license to go and just cut whatever trees want. We have to work very closely with the actual property owners before we go in and trim those trees. In some cases, the actual trees that are close to a service lines, line leading from a transformer to a house, is the responsibility of the customers installed. And this graphic here tries to illustrate that, and we have it up on our website at novascotiapower.ca. But in general, the program that we've been talking about is focused on the primary lines, the high voltage lines, and clearing the trees from those lines. In addition to vegetation management, our asset management program is focused on inspections as well. So every year we have various resources out in the field inspecting our transmission lines. So those are the high voltage lines and our distribution lines as well. Looking at poles, conductors, we have various types of transformers out in the field that we inspect as well. And the vegetation itself, and inspecting that visually to make sure that we have a good growth model on vegetation management. Really focused on making sure that we are proactively replacing assets before they fail, and putting together an overall program on how to do that. We continue to look at improving the accuracy of that model, and making sure that that inspection data that we get is continuing to give us the right intel on the assets that need to be replaced and invested in. In addition to the $20 to $25 million we spend on vegetation management every year, we spend over $100 million annually on asset replacements, but focusing on these inspection types in areas where assets need to be replaced or upgraded, we'll use the investment of $100 million to do that. We also use ATVs, trucks, and helicopters to do some of this inspection. Not all of it is done on foot. There are some locations that we can't access. When we use these various vehicles in order to do that, and all that inspection data is put into the same model and used for the same approach for replacements. We are piloting drones. We started that last year, using drones on various areas that we can't get access in. That's still in the early stages. Line of sight for drones and being able to control them properly is still something that we're working through. We definitely see an opportunity for doing more inspections in the future. Using drones, it allows us to do it more often and get more real-time data on mission. And as I said, all this data that we collect is used for strategic planning and making sure that we're properly investing our money in NASH, the best experience for that. And specifically in your municipality, we've been focused on a number of areas using the inspection data that I mentioned before to target various upgrades. So we spent almost $2.2 million recently on the upgrade to the 69 kilovolt line that feeds the area, and upgrading the various structures and replacing any deteriorated infrastructure that we had in the area. It's almost done now. I think we have about 2 to 4 weeks of work left, and then that entire line will have been upgraded. We're also starting soon a dedicated project for Eight Island Lake. So again, that's a distribution line there, so we'll be looking at the various infrastructure along there and replacing and upgrading the equipment where the inspection data has given us intel to focus on. There is a river crossing there that we are looking at options for potentially either replacing it directly as is or moving it more to a roadside location. And it looks like there's a few different options that we're investigating on that now, but it's likely that we will be moving that river crossing. And then finally, I know the letter that was sent to us recently focused on the off-road section that we have from Country Harbor down to Indian Harbor, I believe the area is. I've actually flown that once myself when we did the construction a few years ago, and it's definitely an area that we are focusing on. There are a few structures there now that need to be directly replaced so that we improve the reliability right away. But over the next few years, we will be moving various locations of that line to roadside to move it out of that off right away. That really hard to access area. and really focusing on those hardest areas to get to first, and then over time, focusing on moving the entire line to roadside. It is a very long line, as most people would know, and we're focused on doing that over the next few years. So in summary, our approach is something that we are continually looking at, really focused on taking the information we get on our structures themselves, as well as vegetation management, and proactively investing in both of those throughout the year to address the changing weather that we've seen over the last 15 years. Any questions for us on that?
I have one. It's great work here. Next few years for the to move that to roadside, what does next few years mean? 5, 10, 15? I know you can't give me an absolute, but I mean,
it's a great question, and unfortunately I can't give you an absolute because of how big it is. We are dedicated to, in 2022, looking at the areas that need to be replaced right away. So there are some locations that directly will need to be replaced. They won't be moved to roadside, they'll be replaced right where they are to make sure that we don't jeopardize any reliability today. But we will be looking each year going forward to move a portion of that line to roadside. Our goal will be to do that as soon as we can, but I don't have an exact timeline for you yet. But we can move you off the need to move along with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Jane Farfelder. You mentioned the Country Harbor, Indian Harbor Lake one, and also the Giant or the Welsh Road one. What about the 9 Mile Woods Road? Has anybody been looking at that lately? Because up there is growing up, that's pushing the wires up. I know I've traveled that road quite extensively last year.
So I can share that part of my role here is I create action items. So when you asked your question, I looked at my colleagues to see if anyone's eyes lit up with excitement around that question. Matt, did you happen to have any feedback about that specific location?
I don't. I was just going to say that we can definitely take that away and get you an update on it if Arlene or Baron don't have nothing.
Sure, appreciate
yeah.
that. Sure, thank you.
Just to clarify, the 9 Mile Woods
Road? No problem. We'll definitely have
9 Mile Woods Road?
Yeah. It's one between Melrose and kind of Crossroads. Okay.
Council member.
Not really a question, but just I'm a concern. I'm sure you've heard it before with the proposed increase to rates. Just everything seems to be going up, and wages don't seem to be following suit. We are in an area that has a lot of fixed income people, elderly, and anyways, just a concern that. You know, people are, some residents may have to start choosing between medication and power. I've worked with low income families in the past, and that's just a concern I'd like to raise. I've worked with one of your advocates before, who's very lovely and helpful. But anyhow, just a concern with the proposed rate increases, that it will negatively impact residents.
Yeah, we definitely understand that. We know how impactful rate increases are to people, and we understand affordability is a big topic on everybody's mind right now. What I can say is that we are working very closely with the utility and review board on that, and the various customer advocates to make sure that we have a really robust review of all of that. But I definitely understand what you're saying.
I have a quick question. It doesn't have much to do with vegetation. Sorry. Well, actually, there's a couple of trees hanging on wires going up Copper Hill, if you're going that way. If the council is looking at developing a on on a municipal property, a solar farm, what kind of support and, well, any financial help would Nova Scotia Power be able to provide?
We actually have a customer solutions team that that looks at all those various options, and we understand how many renewable generation initiatives are underway right now. So we know there's more and more of that every day, and we're certainly open to talking about that. Perhaps we can get you in contact of to engage with them.
That would probably be helpful, you know, to get some names in our data bank before we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've created an action item for that. I'll follow up with you. Thank you.
Not at $8 a pound of vocals.
If I may, Mary, I believe myself and our former CIO had met with somebody, his name was Max Clark. Would that be the right person for our area?
Yeah, yes, part of the team,
I have contacts with him here, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I believe solar was one of those questions we asked, so we'll reconnect.
Great.
And follow up.
Yeah. Happy to hear that.
That's great.
Anybody else have any questions? I guess we're questioned out.
Well, with that said, we'll let you folks get on to the balance of your meeting. Thank you very much. Matt, I'm going to leave the meeting on our behalf, if you can hear me.
Yes, I can. Oh. Thank you, everybody, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. And the dedicated contact channels that you see on that information, feel free to bring forward any questions that come to mind after this, you know, that you may have not thought to think of or respond to in the moment. And we appreciate the opportunity to come down and see this beautiful jurisdiction. I have to say, I especially enjoyed the river. I've never seen it before. It was a lovely drive. Yeah. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. You do get used to the bugs.
No, not really.
Come up today with a vengeance. Not just here, but everywhere.
You get used to the smell of citronella.
Councilor Mailman, was it Herman?
Are
you chatted? The low income candidate? Herman, yeah, he is lovely. Oh, perfect, yeah. Yeah, he said it's 4 spots away from me.
Oh, if you see him, I don't
really
not there anymore,
yeah.
But he was so
wonderful.
I'll tell him that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Gordon. Before I forget, can I hide you after meeting for just 2 seconds? We're getting a lot of issues with stolen neutral wire being stolen out of the air. Mm-hmm. So this vandalism is taking place in your communities, of course, that has been replaced and fixed and such, and does interfere with the quality of your power. Just keep an eye out along the road. Do you seem to be working on the line, and they're not in a Nova Scotia Power vehicle, or a line truck that has a name on it? Mm-hmm. They're probably up to no good. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call, or a 911 call, or we'd really love to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our substations are also being targeted. Break-ins, interfering with the power grids that are there inside the substation. So just if you keep your eyes open and share that with your community members, and maybe we can stop some of this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
All right, moving along to correspondence. 8A is Santa Barbara. We received a letter back to our, I know we had a meeting with them February 2nd, I believe. They were virtual. We asked them some questions. We want some input back. I know we did. We just received a little bit of input back. I tried to listen and see what I actually asked, and I couldn't access what I wanted to on my iPad, so I'll go home and listen to it on my real computer. But I'm sure that we asked about Cochrane Hill, so, and I can see where they wouldn't be able to tell us exactly what's going on Cochrane Hill, because
it's not even open yet, so I'm sure at that time I asked, would it be possible to give us some jobs and some pay scales for the one that's open on Tuquay? We received back a proposed Cochrane Home Line project with possible job descriptions, no number of how many of each, no wage associated with them, so I'm a little disappointed in the response. But moving forward, I guess maybe we can ask Ivy Wilson again, and we can send another letter out and say we'd like some the answer to the true questions that were asked on the audio. But other than that, we did get a response back, and they're looking forward to working with us to give us more information. Does anybody else have any further discussion on that or anything, or we can ask what we got back? Okay, moving along to 8B is Fort Becker and Lighthouse Road. You received a letter. Here's a short one, I can read it, from Don and Earth Dodge. Good evening, gentlemen. I'm writing on behalf of the Fort Becker Denton Area Planning Association. The association would like to know if the municipality has any planned maintenance for the Lighthouse Road this spring. This time the road is riddled with potholes and it's difficult to maneuver. We have our Artisan resident arriving near the end of May. It would help us to plan for the upcoming tour season if you knew what your intentions were. I know I have asked Marissa to reach out to Paul Flynn and see what he says. So I'm going to let Marissa tell us what she knows.
Mm-hmm. Not too much. So I did reach out to Paul Flynn. We just established there was just, he wanted to confirm that it was a municipal road. So it is a municipal road. And I did ask if there's any way to partner on providing any type of upkeep or service. And it's not typical unless it's through a cost share, same as a lot of our other municipal roads. So he's looking into the process to be able to add that. But I would assume that it's going to be a long process. It's not something that's going to be immediate. So for this season, I think it's kind of potentially out of the cards. So council will have to decide how much maintenance, if any, they would like to do for this year. I know in our capital budget for the next fiscal, there was some set aside for the maintenance for the Fort Beckerton Road. So it would just be up to council for discussion. And to identify, too, we can identify if there are certain sections that need to be done, if it's just grading it, if there's pothole, the extent of the maintenance.
Okay, what's everybody's thoughts on that? I mean, I think that we should do something.
Yeah, definitely.
There is a crisis for grading it, and maybe we need someone to go and have a look from the municipality to see what is actually, what is needed, mm-hmm. whether there's a little gravel need or just grading would suffice this year, till we can add a little more to it next year maybe. What's everybody else's thoughts?
Perhaps Councillor Harpel could have a look since it's in the
Okay, so we'll ask Councillor Harper to have a look and see what is required. Would it be possible to make a recommendation to have a limit right now to go forward and get it graded if that is all that's required? Is that something that
we'll just make a note if there are going to be funds allocated for this, it isn't within our operating budget, so it would be coming out of our capital.
Or gas tax.
Or gas tax is also appropriate place, just so you're aware.
Okay. So I don't know what grading would cost, but I guess maybe we should get a price first.
Yeah, I would recommend instead of putting boxing yourself in, is to maybe once Councillor Harpel and maybe an administrative staff member can assist as well to figure out what needs to be done in consultation as well as with Donnie Dodge and Lighthouse Association to see what we need, and then we can go forward and see if there's maybe a tender for the work.
I do know that when my road that I have into my cottage is right away, and I did have it graded 1 year, and all I had to do was went to the office in Ganesh, and I had to pay them up front, but they went out and graded it after that. I mean, that was quite a while ago. I graded my own road down, but it was quite a while ago. So at that point, I know they did it, so it's possible to get done, and I'm sure the gentleman that did the work on the road Jordan Goff would also possible to get a price on to see what it would cost to have it graded again for the year. So anyway, and maybe we gotta put it, obviously put it there as a tender, but that all takes time. And I know time is of the essence when you're trying to get bumpy roads fixed. Okay, so we will do that then. Councilor Barkle will go down and look maybe with the municipal and Donnie maybe at the same time.
Yeah.
Have a look and we'll bring it to their next meeting. Okay, perfect. Moving along to 8C. So we had some correspondence back from Justin Houston, our deputy minister for our communities, culture, tourism, and heritage, about the regional public library's service review. They have sent us a draft statement of work. It's still in the draft form, so we can't share it with the public at this time, but it is something that is looks very well. It looks like they're going to do a thorough job. They're including the public, all the stakeholders, interested in what everybody has to say about all this, and they are going to have a mid, the end timeline is August, end of August, but there is a point partway through for a review, halfway through, I believe. So it's, it looks like they're looking, they're going to do a thorough job of this and make it right. So looking forward to having that. September, I'm looking forward to September. So, anybody have any questions on that? He is looking for a response back, just to say that we are happy with the statement of work. And so, if council is happy with what it looks like, then we can help get Marissa and her team to answer him back and say that we are happy with the statement of work and we will move forward as quickly as possible. Okay, great. That's what we will do then. Okay, moving along to 8D. That is the Sherbrooke ATV Club. Marissa, you got that correspondence you used.
So staff received correspondence from the president of the St. Mary's ATV Club. This is, they're in final, they were, are currently in final stages of planning an ATV trail from Sherbrooke to Sonora. And they've been working on the project for the past 5 years, and they're very close to the construction phase. So through a lot of their planning, they are required to obtain permission from each landowner that the trail will cross. They are aware of one property that is actually owned by the municipality that they didn't notice previously in their planning. So they do need approval from the municipality to allow the ATV use. This PID was recently vested through a tax sale, I believe, and it's just one of the newer ones. And if you can see in the map that's attached here, is the trail is at the very back. It's a very long parcel of property, and the ATV access would be at the very back of the parcel, not near the road access, whereas if the municipality was looking to develop, that may be more the area they were intending to develop there. Everything in regards to the property is going, and the permission and the trails are going through ATV ANS. So they have all the liability insurance that would come with that if the council did so choose to grant permission. So it's just an item for discussion for council, how you would like me to move forward.
Any questions or anything for Marissa?
But it's long,
very long, and yeah.
It goes from Sonora Road right back to where it connects up on the One Harbor.
Oh, yeah.
Dirt Road, yeah.
So I would say by looking, we're looking at about the last 1 or 2 acres of the properties where they're coming across, roughly.
Yeah, I guess so.
But just by looking at the map, yeah. So what's everybody's thought on that? Do we want to, I mean, the ATV trails are great. It's great to be able to do get out and get across. I know they're making it longer and better, so it's good for everybody. And most ATV trails are not just for ATVs, they are multi-use, so I'm in support. So could we have a recommendation to support what they asked for?
Permission, present for the property.
Okay, so they're looking for a land use occupier's permission form to be filled out to further propose trail across our PID number 37507662. So I have a motion to that effect, please. Motion by Councilor Baker, or recommended by Councilor Baker, second by Councilor Harple, that we do grant permission to go across that property. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Recommendation is approved. Okay, we are moving on to other matters of business. Municipal Volunteer of the Year nominations. I'm gonna take that one, so you're better.
So Carrie isn't with us today, but on her behalf, we're just bringing forward the nominees that we have for the Municipal Volunteers Award for the year. So what we've done here is just give you the nominees that we have received. We've just redacted their names so that it was more of a easier approach for you guys to kind of look at what they've done, and up for council to nominate one of them moving forward. And just to note for the public, there are six nominations.
Just from the information giving, I think a number of folks have already been on, like, have received this in the past. Is there a person in this list that has never been, or for many years has not been?
Yeah, I'm going to go to my historian, Marion, there. She probably would remember a lot further back than I would. I believe nominee A has not been nominated.
I don't recall any of these on here.
Okay, maybe they've been put forward in the past.
They've been put forward, but I do not remember any of these being volunteered to the interview.
Okay.
But yes, some of these have been nominated
not
before.
Nominated before, yes, because some seem familiar.
Abel's never looked, I know, not that I'm gonna catch it.
No.
No, remember.
We know. We saw it. So does anybody have any, favorites that can stand out in there? That's for Counselor Mellon.
I was kind of leaning towards B.
I will go with A. I knew anyway.
I don't think I can put May, Old Fashioned Christmas, I don't think I can.
You have a conflict of interest.
Yeah, yeah.
So does everybody just wanna put secret ballot forward and see if we've got more than one for the same person? That'd be the easiest way to do it.
All right, it's getting your push up super ballots.
Think it's done, I'll tell you.
You can get a whole page.
Think it's better than I ever thought. Yeah, not better than that, they bigger?
It's looking mixed up.
No, you go ahead, I'll gonna write down them as you call them out, if that's okay, Mary.
Random order.
You play an election. You're not as much fun.
Nominee A. Nominee E. Nominee A. Nominee D. Nominee A. That's three for A, one for E, one for D.
Suspense is pleasing that.
Nominee C. Okay. Nominee F. All over the board, so with three votes, nominee A.
So nominee A is our winner.
Perfect, so we have a motion, and we can let you know the name. Actually, no, we will not, because we need to make sure the person accepts, apologies. Yes, thank you, Warden.
Nominee A.
Kirk.
Second. Motion by Deputy Warden Fuller, second by Counselor Baker, that we have nominee A as our volunteer for the scholarship.
If they accept.
If they accept.
Otherwise, we'll be back.
We will collect the information, just because there is personal contact information on this. Thank you.
Okay, we have a little bit of time.
This letter from the minister, you wanna collect those too, or is that something you want to get loose? Or do you have better keep that.
We can collect them after the meeting, yes, thank you.
Yeah, that seems to be something that we shouldn't let that.
Once a draft, can't raise it yet, that's right. Nine B, workplace harassment and discrimination policy. Marcy, I'm gonna let you take that one as well.
So this policy was developed by staff, and it's in relation to.
I didn't even see you do that.
It's in relation to setting a healthy work-related setting and workplace. So within this policy, the authority is under provisions set out in section 48.3 of the MGA. The scope does apply to all council members, full-time, part-time, seasonal, temporary, hourly, and salaried employees, as well as independent contractors, agents, and applicants and reps of the municipality. It also is directly related to anyone attending a municipal workplace, which would include members of the public, visitors, and individuals conducting business at the municipality. It clearly defines different types of harassment and discrimination within the policy, and it also sets forth a procedure to follow, an informal and formal process, if an allegation of either harassment or discrimination has been made. So we wanted to bring this to council's attention. We do have a few more tweaks to make to it, as well as we are having it go through our legal, just to ensure that we have all of our bases covered in regards to that. So just wanted to put it forward to council for discussion, or any items or things that you see that we may have missed, or things that you would like to have changed. And we hope to have it back on the next committee as a whole for approval.
Well, I actually didn't open it over. I thought it looked very, very good.
I looked it over too, but there was a couple of things I was a little concerned about. If there was one of these brought forward and you went to the CAO, and it could be the CAO that was doing something to this, and then you go to the warden and then the warden takes the CAO, it's not being handled, so is there anybody above the CAO and the warden that a person could go to?
So under section 8.4, if the CIO is the accused offender, then the written report may be submitted to the warden. That would be the process, and then it would be the responsibility of the warden to ensure, because as he is, and the council is the boss of the CIO, to ensure that the proper procedure takes place. And that can be in conjunction potentially with legal as well, with the CIO not being present, or not being within that conversation until it needs to be. Correct. Does that clarify, or?
I think so.
Okay.
Councilor Evans, we'll go.
Well, I was just going to say, it would be the duty of the warden to take that seriously until proven otherwise, or.
Exactly.
Yeah. It looks really good. It's comprehensive. It covers a lot.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that it clearly outlined the process.
Yeah.
It was a big piece missing. We don't have that kind of within our code of conduct policy either. So this is a good start, and so like I said, if you guys have any changes or additions, let us know, and we'll continue to work on that over the next week, the next meeting.
The only thing that kind of thought was like, somebody said like the old labor policy where somebody's not comfortable to like the board or the CAO, would they come to a member of council and ask to take it further?
I don't think that's in the policy, but if that's something, what I can do is we can write a line of that in and have legal take a look and see if it's within the parameters of other council members. Yeah.
And then the term council would have to be worked on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Depending on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Thank you, Councilor.
That's probably a good idea. It's such a good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Councilor.
There was just something that kind of came. I know sometimes bullying is so subtle. Right, like it can be very passive aggressive, so it's sometimes hard to prove. So I don't know if there's any way we can, because sometimes it's hard to put your finger on what you know what's happening, right? And I don't know. There's just been situations in my personal work experience where it's really hard to kind of verbalize what's going on, but it is happening.
times when those incidents are happening, they're so small, they get shrugged off, but as they add up, it can become a very big problem in the workplace. We can put some wording in there regarding that, and maybe if someone feels that way, you know, it is small, to ensure that that staff member or counselor is documenting that, and then it continues. If something continues, then they have the documentation to move forward. But we'll also again ask legal if there's anything, and look at other. We have looked at other municipal policies to see kind of how ours matches with them. But that is a good point. It's hard to put into words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
One, just to expand on forfeiture. Just recently, we've had some forfeiture in this, and I think the chief is here. Can I go over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And anyway, they. It'd be good if everybody had that training.
So this was training that you just recently took?
Yeah.
Okay. Do
well,
you mind if
no,
I...
No, I'm saying the same reason, but it was last January.
Can I ask who facilitated the training? if you remember it, you could send it to me, that would be great. I can look into it.
Chris Jones and someone else. I think I might have
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you, Council.
No, don't tell me.
No worries, we'll get it later.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Alright, anybody have thoughts or comments or discussion on the workplace harassment discrimination policy? Okay, we will move along to 9C, RCMP review of special of service needs. Marissa, I guess you're going to be up again.
So I just wanted to provide council with the documents that were provided by the Department of Justice to us about the two different review processes. So like I said previously, one is called the GDPRM, which is the General Duty Police Resourcing Model, which is a general overview. This model is specific to the actual officers, the time response in regards to calls, the time geographical, the number of calls that are received, and that process, as stated kind of in this letter, the way that would work is council would write a letter to the Department of Justice stating that they'd like to have this review process done. From speaking with the representative from Department of Justice, she mentioned that I believe there may only be one of these happening currently. The other avenue of review, there's maybe five going on at the moment. So that was one process. The other process was the, let's see here, the policing review, which is the kind of the one that goes hand in hand with community consultation. It's more of a council and Department of Justice collaboration to look at the review, to review the services that are the police, the RCMP that we have, look at alternative options, and then you would have to form a committee, a review committee of this. So it is a little bit, it is in depth in regards to hands-on with council as well as staff. So I just wanted to provide you guys with both of these options to see if you want to either do either of them,
So the second one was more for to help you decide if 3.5 or 4 officers was sufficient for our area, or the first one would do that.
Yeah. So the first one is going to look at your number of officers in relation to your geographical space, as well as the number of calls you typically get. But just to note that the representative from the Department of Justice did say that if you do this review, you may think you need less officers, but it may come back as a recommendation that you need more. That's very specific to the service and the RCMP officers and the calls. It's very data-driven, whereas the policing review, second type of the policing review, where there's the council and community process, you're going to also be looking at public consultation as to what the public thinks you need in regards to a policing service. If there are other options under the Police Nova Scotia Police Act that allow you to either have RCMP, you can have your own policing force, it's very specific. So depending on those consultations and the committee's discretion, you may end up saying that the RCMP is the best service, but it gives you more of a consultation, and you may be able to find more cost-effective ways, like community resolutions, that maybe something, some parts of the police service that is being used now can be done through the municipality or community consultation in another way, which would help alleviate what you need in regards to the RCMP service.
Okay, thank you, Marcia. Does council have any questions or comments on either one of those processes? Or I see Deputy Warden Fuller's finger on the button. Go ahead, Deputy Warden.
Yeah, the first here, it's going to be facts and figures and numbers, traffic stops, and yeah, it's useful, but it doesn't give a really a good, clear community picture, because what you may have a rash of speeders in Sonora, and it looks like we're in the middle of a crime spree, number-wise, but it doesn't take into account some of the other issues in the community where there's like a constant need for policing for neighbor disputes that they're just not rated the same because they're using the computerized record system, which is good, but it's what you put in. The second one, the community consultation, I think it's really what we ought to be looking at, because you know, what do people think?
Yes.
You know, not there's going to be people think we shouldn't have any police. It's in addition to the numbers, where they are, how they are, and what are people most concerned about. And I know from outside sources, employment, that the new corporal here has started. He's already been to the school once, and he's a good discussion. He's heard what we had to say. And I think that the whole overall holistic policing model is something we really have to look at. My opinion.
Okay, thank you, Deputy Warden Fuller. So I guess no one asks, is there a cost to either one of these?
I'm pretty sure Marion reminded me, this was quite a while ago, thank you, that we did have the discussion with the reps from the Department of Justice, but I don't believe there was a cost to this. Even the one that had the community consultation, it was all, we would have a rep that would sit on the committee from Department of Justice, and they would help facilitate some of this process. Obviously, it would cost you if the recommendation was different than an RCMP, like that cost may be different. But other than that, it would be staff and council time. I don't imagine this this process is going to be quick. So I can definitely ask Department of Justice what type of hours that looks like in regards to staff and council time. And that way, financially, we can figure that part out. And depending on how many they have already started in regards to these processes, I can find out when we would be able to start this type of process.
What is council's thoughts? Are we interested in either one of these options?
I think option B would
be. I think if we had more information, hours, you know, to take this in and the public is listening, so maybe they could reach out to the counselor and say if they would be interested in us carrying something like this out to. It is a very high cost in our budget. There's ways that we could maybe make it more cost effective. I'm sure that our constituents would love that. I know I would. So we'll move forward with trying to get a little bit more information and we'll revisit. Perfect, thank you. Okay, we are down to 9D, which is Councillor Miller brought up, gas prices. And they are high and going higher.
And I was wondering if there would be any way that council could write a letter to the powers to be to see if there's anything that can be done, because this gas prices are just, people can't afford it. And I mean every week, because I'm sure my
Friday, it'll go up again for the long weekend. So there must be something, if we could write a letter. I think one of the other municipalities has written letters too. Would be Premier Houston and MLA Morrow on RB. See if they could speak to it.
Anybody else like to chime in on that, or do we have a consensus that we do write the letter, or what, what's everybody's thought?
Well, I think we need to write a letter. It's ridiculous what they're doing.
Just with like the provincial tax, I think it's 15.5 cents per liter at the pump. And then I'm pretty sure if it was another 10 cents per liter, like, we could somehow lower that.
Okay, so we, I guess the consensus is around the table that we will write a letter to ask them if, I mean, we are a very rural area. We have people on fixed incomes. It's starting to hurt our constituents. It's, you know, I mean, granted, we don't have to heat our homes right now because it's coming in the summer, but thought we were going to save for the summer for next winter, we're putting in our car to go to grocery, so.
I think it's also going to hurt tourists.
Yeah, of everything.
Okay, so we will get the staff to write a letter to Premier Houston and MLA, Greg Morrow, to voice our concerns about the gas, price of gas. Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Thank you, Councilor Malloy, for bringing that to our attention.
Yep.
We are at the end of the meeting, I believe, aren't we? Okay, perfect. Would I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second.
Motion by Councilor Harper, second by Councilor Malloy, that the meeting be adjourned. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.